Anybody who ever dropped a child off at college probably felt that tug of the last bit of advice. You know, the bits of wisdom you feel the need to impart before the former fledglings leave the nest for good and soar into the world of adults. Kansas City artist and author Becky Blades felt that tug in a big way when she sent her firstborn off to Harvard. She sent a letter. The letter eventually became a book with 270 bits of advice and a number of bits of Becky's artwork. First piece of advice and title are the same: Do Your Laundry or You'll Die Alone. Becky Blades is a graduate of the University of Missouri School of Journalism. That makes two of us. She's worked in a number of jobs in communications, including publicist, and is an artist, entrepreneur, and an author on adventurous living. Becky, pleasure to have you on the Jefferson Exchange.
Pleasure to be here, fellow Mizzou grad.
M-I-Z.
Yeah, good to know that. Now I have to be on my game.
That's right. So you're described as an author on adventurous living. Is this book about adventurous living, or is it more a collection of cautionary tales?
I think it's a mixture. You know, I think if once we know our people are safe, we want them to live life full out. So once we know our babies know how to put the oxygen mask on themselves first, I want them to fly.
That's a great analogy there, the oxygen mask on you first. Can young men make use of this book, too? I mean, it is generally pitched toward women, but, I mean, can young men find some gems of wisdom in here as well?
Yes. I think, to be honest, it is directed to women. The art is pretty feminine, but I've been getting stories from people now that the book has been out a couple of months that their sons have been picking it up, and if they left it around, they'll hear a belly laugh from the other room, and it's a 20-year-old young man who caught the right advice. It's certainly, there's about two spreads that are gender specific, but you know, the laundry thing, of course, was that's how we met guys in Mizzou back in the day. We go to the laundry room the first few days of school, and we know that deer in the headlights look was, you know.
Yeah, right. You have to teach them how to separate the whites from the darks.
Right. But girls in this generation, I think our girls have been so busy, or we've been hovering as parents and giving them a laundry pass. So the laundry was a metaphor that worked for girls, too.
So tell us, Becky, about how the ball got rolling with this project. It did start as a letter to your older daughter?
Yes, which started as a journal entry. The first day of her senior year of high school, I was feeling a little melancholy, you know, realizing, oh, gosh, one more year, and then she's out of my control. And I'm a journaler, so I started journaling that morning. And in the middle of it, I ran up to her room for something and realized that the room looked like it had been tossed. There was laundry everywhere. And this was the first day of school, the day when I thought everything should be organized. And I realized that this highly driven, successful daughter of mine did not know how to organize her life. She didn't know how to have a laundry day. And it was my overwhelm, you know, my problem, not hers, that I started second-guessing my parenting, saying, oh my gosh, this is not my best work. No one will love her. This can't be enough. So I started thinking of all the things we hadn't talked about and journaling rather than lecturing her all the time. And by the time it was time for her to go away, I had about 150 tidbits that I tried to make entertaining, and I sent it in an email. And the subject line was, do your laundry or you'll die alone. She wrote me back, and then she called me back, and she said, Mom, you're always telling people to get their books out of them and their creativity out of them. You should make this a book. You should put your artwork in it, and you should have it done by the time Tess, her younger sister, graduated from high school, which was just 3 weeks ago. So I made it.
So, but that's an interesting point. There is actually one of those bits of advice, and there are 270 bits of them, is to get that book out of you that's in there.
Yeah, you know, don't you run into a lot of people who say, I've got a book in me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I say, this is my first book. I have three sitting on the computer that aren't worth being out in public. But, you know, that's where the creative, adventurous living comes in. At this stage of my life, what I'm doing a lot of is helping creative friends and colleagues get their creativity out. I think we're all creative. I think if you do have a book in you, you know it, and you should not let what's happening in the publishing industry or getting an agent or some of those things slow you down.
Since this did start as an email to your daughter, did you try to have a sit down with her, or what do you think would have happened if you did?
I tried a few. You know, I tried to sneak in some of these tidbits. I tried to find teachable moments. I think a lot of parents do that, but I'm not graceful enough to pull it off. Even the dog was hiding in the corner because they would just be so awkward and come out at the wrong time. So I decided to zip it and write it down.
All right, and we're all the richer for it. The book is called Do Your Laundry or You'll Die Alone, Advice Your Mom Would Give If She Thought You Were Listening, hence the discussion of the sit-down with her. We'll come back and talk more with the author and artist Becky Blades when we return to the Jefferson Exchange. We'll take your phone calls and emails as well. Let's find out the bits of advice you might have given to your own kids or great advice that people gave to you that you never forgot. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we come back with Becky Blades in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the author and artist Becky Blades. She puts all of her skills to work in the book Do Your Laundry or You'll Die Alone, Advice Your Mom Would Give If She Thought You Were Listening. It's a 5x5 book filled with 270 bits of advice and a lot of connecting images that Becky has created. A lot of fun to read as well. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange and talk about maybe the bits of advice that people gave you or that you gave other people that might have been good and might have been just awful. Doesn't matter. We're just curious to hear what you might have heard over the years that really stuck out in your mind. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. So as I pointed out, it is not simply a book of lists by any stretch of the imagination. How is the book organized, though? I mean, I imagine you wanted to cluster some of these bits of advice closer to each other and farther from others.
You know, that was the hardest thing to do, was to order these things, because they came out of me randomly. And as I got the challenge to put them into a book, I felt like needed to pull you through. So some things are clustered with, topically, and some are clustered with little payoff. For example, there's a trio. Number 30 says, admit when you're wrong. Number 31 says, admit when you don't know something. And number 32 says, admit when you need to move up a size. So each one of those in themselves, you could really talk to your kids about. You know, admitting when we're wrong is really a really important life skill. And admitting, my daughter was one who really had a hard time admitting she didn't know something. She'd go check it out and come back to the conversation, you know, that's she belongs at Harvard. And then admitting when you need to go up a size is something every girlfriend should tell her girlfriend.
Right. And there's another set of clusters here that sticks out pretty early on in the book. Item number 8 is actually 3 different bits. Friends don't let friends drive drunk, text while driving, get discount body art.
Right. And that, you know, that kind of leads to the next one. If you're thinking about the friends don't let friends from our generation, the next point is a friend who's mad at you for taking her car keys is better than a dead friend.
Right, which is it's well said. And I'm going to come back to the discount body art first, though. I mean, did your kids reach adulthood without tattoos?
They did. I know of.
Nothing visible, anyway.
Right.
So I have to imagine that certainly some laughter, because that's what we get as we read the book, and perhaps some tears as well as you wrote these.
Yeah, you know, I almost teared up as you were doing the intro, thinking about that feeling that I had knowing they were going, and now my second one's just graduated. I think thinking about the fact that this is an adult person now, and, you know, they're going to have to figure this out on their own. And for some reason, the exercise of writing these things down and realizing once I say them doesn't mean they'll assimilate them or know them, but it's all I can do as a parent right now. That's pretty, you know, it's healing, but it's also sad.
Yeah, it is. That is, yeah, and got yeah, we got some issues with our teenagers as well right now, so I can relate. But the idea though is that these are bit more nuanced bits of advice in some cases than the stuff you used to give easily, which, you know, stand up straight, chew with your mouth shut, stuff like that.
Right. Well, you know, and we could make them more sophisticated. You know, technology is a topic that my mom didn't have to deal with. So one of the things that I sprinkle through here is how to deal with that device, because I think it has disrupted parenting more than anything, and that's the cell phone. So one of the entries is pocket your cell phones during meals. In our family, it's a fight. We continue to fight, but I just want them going out of the house knowing it's not okay. It's rude. If you're having a meal with someone, your boss is probably going to think it's rude, and err on the side of turning it off, putting it away, and putting it in your purse.
And I must say, I do love the bits of follow-up advice, too, like don't try to hide it under your napkin. You're not fooling anyone.
Right. Right, and then later on, there's a point about looking people in the eye, which is hard to do if you're looking at your phone.
Right, right. That's a big one. In some of these cases, though, in your own house, Becky Blades, was it like slamming the barn door once the horse was out? You're giving advice that they've already ignored long since?
A little bit. But at least I can now come back to the points in the book, and really it's me letting those things go. I've said it. You know, my kids are both home now. The oldest one has been home just for a few days, and she's going to go to Chicago for an internship. But for a couple of weeks, we're all in the same house. And so all of the things that drove me crazy when she was a senior in high school are pretty much still there.
Right. Yeah. But, welcome to reentry.
Right. But, you know, now we have the joke, you know, hey, that's number 49. That's saying. And they've had fun with it, and they know they're not perfect. And they know how I feel. And I think, you know, one of the things this is a gift to other parents to kind of be able to say it in the third person. I have women that can tell my kids to do things in a way that I can't. So I'm looking around for other books for them, too.
Mm-hmm. You know, since I asked that some of the advice might have been things you said to the kids that they'd already ignored long ago, but for that matter, were there some things in the book that you never actually said to the kids that went in there?
Yeah, I don't think I said some of the mushier things. You know, on the back of the book, life will not grade you, but it will test you. I'll just read part of it. Coming of age means saying goodbye to feedback for all the work you do. You won't get counted for attendance or get extra credit for neatness, but showing up neatly will be the least that is expected. You'll not know what you're doing compared to others or how many points you need to pass. You won't know your place on the curve, and it won't matter anyway. Don't worry. You'll get used to it. Mm. And that was really for my oldest, who was very driven, very successful in school. I wanted to tell her in a way, you know, that wasn't lecture-y face-to-face, that, you know, all the stress you felt as a senior in high school, it's not going to matter maybe as much as you think it is, and you're not going to get grades for, not everything's going to count in that way in college and beyond.
No, life's grading system is very different once you get past that point.
Right. So I never said that to her in person. I was glad I could write it down.
Becky Blades is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, author and artist. She has been the creator of Do Your Laundry or You'll Die Alone, advice your mom would give if she thought you were listening. It's 270 bits of advice connected with some wonderful illustrations that Becky's provided. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange and tell us about bits of advice you got, whether it was good or bad, or advice you gave to somebody else that might stand out in your mind. Join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. Our Rogue Valley local number is 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Here is Jacob in Springfield. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Becky Blades.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to make two points. One is a specific point of advice, and one is a general mode of advice. Now, my specific advice for a college student is learn to cook. You know, that's something you're going to need every day of your life, maybe up to three times a day. And the cheapest food that you could get, and some people, I always ask this question to people, and some people say it's a potato, some people say it's beans and rice, some people say cornflakes and milk, but generally for college students, it's ramen. But an ultimate test is get a dozen eggs and be able to make 12 separate egg dishes from that. You know, fried egg, scrambled egg, you know, poached egg, hard-boiled egg, soft-boiled egg, you know, some type of special omelet. You know, and that way, if you could learn how to cook an egg, you'll never starve.
Right.
And you'll eat a pretty high-protein diet, you know, for the rest of your life. And it's something, practical skills on, like, protein chemistry and stuff. And I'll tell you one thing Harvard will never teach you or any other college is how to cook. Okay, and that's an essential life skill.
All right.
Now, my other point of advice is regarding general acceptance of advice. If there's two types of advice that everything distills down. One is good advice and one is bad advice. And by bad advice, I mean things just that can't be implemented within your particular situation. And most advice actually goes down to is ignored or discarded or, you know, never implemented.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a small amount, maybe probably less than 10%, that's actually received and then implemented by the person that you gave it to. And generally, my ultimate advice for advice is if you could tell the difference between good advice and bad advice and then implement that successfully, then you probably don't need any advice.
Interesting perspective. Thanks for that, Jacob. Always good to hear from you. So, Becky, I would add to that, Jacob, by the way, if you're going to learn how to cook, which is a great recommendation, learn how to wash dishes as well, particularly the pots and pans. You really don't want to think that the reason you were sick on Thursday morning was because you didn't clean the pots well enough before you cooked on Thursday night. And so, Becky, what about his idea that the really good advice is knowing the difference between good and bad advice?
I think that's right on, and I didn't, you know, I didn't even think about that in writing this. I think the cooking advice is great, and I've already been told I left that piece out because I'm not a very good cook, and I love the eggs thing too, and I love the dishwashing things. So I'm having to work on a boy version book, so I may steal those, guys.
All right, fair enough. But, you know, when he talked about the bits of advice, though, that we all tend to ignore or discard, and you know, there's a lot of, sure, Mom, which I'm sure you've heard a few times.
Yeah.
You mentioned the original list at about 150. The book contains 270, but I mean, there's so many things you can tell a young person about the world, a lot of which, they know already, but a little reminder never hurts, right? I just wonder how much whittling or expanding did you have to do to arrive at the number?
Well, after the 150 that I sent Taylor, then I started collecting a few more things that applied more to my other daughter, Tess, who is a very different person. And, you know, you've already noted that some of it's advice and you shoulds, but some of it is really just inspiration and encouragement and flip witticisms. I mean, the word advice is used very loosely. But more than anything, I like to think that it's just a mother's caring voice, you know, with some little wisdom and encouragement more than advice.
I have to believe that some of the bits of advice in the book you probably learned the hard way, and I think any man who's been married for more than a couple of years can relate to the advice about identifying what you want for your birthday.
Absolutely. It's how does that go? You can, just because someone's the love of your life doesn't mean he'll know what you want for your birthday. Speak up.
Uh-huh.
And that leads to the other one about, there's one about birthdays, which essentially says, if you're not happy on your birthday, do a do-over. Don't be a martyr. And I've learned that with the whole family, with kids. Moms get disappointed a lot. And so I've just taken the philosophy that it's up to me to make my own happiness. So if they don't celebrate me on my birthday, I make it the next day also. I could have a whole week of birthday if they don't come up with something.
I like the way it's worded, too. It's your birthday until you're happy.
Yes.
So if it didn't actually happen on the day, and it didn't happen the day after or the day after that, then, you know, if you get to the fourth or fifth day and you finally had a good day, okay, then it's your birthday.
Right, or you're worn out and you're just...
just give up on it, sure.
Happy to stay home.
Right. There's a lot of stuff in here that, you know, things obviously people have heard before. Use it or lose it. We could probably spend 15 minutes on just this part about the kinds of things that you need to use or lose.
Right, right. And that's a powerful one. That's one I heard in a different context. But when you think about technology today and life skills, even writing, it's anything you don't do frequently, you're going to have to relearn a little bit. So, and then I like the next two are some of my favorites that I really wanted my kids to get. Fake it till you make it is one. But everyone feels like a fake except the real fakes.
Uh-huh.
The important one is, you know, that fraud complex that we all get hit with.
Sure, where we all think we're not good enough for what we're doing, right?
Right. Like when they find out that I really can barely do this or I don't know what I'm talking about, we all have that if we're normal. But, you know, there are, psychopaths out there or narcissists who believe their own lies, and so those are the real fakes, and we don't have any time for them.
So what other bits of advice did you offer in the book for things like confidence and how to carry yourself in a situation where you, well, fake it till you make it is an obvious one, but I mean, any other things in that vein about conveying confidence, even if it is perhaps not really there at the moment?
Well, the part about dreams, I really like. There's a entry that says, show your genes who's boss. And that leads up to show your dreams who's boss. And that speaks to, let's see if I can find it. It says that, you know, sometimes we sell ourselves short and we talk ourselves out of our dreams. My daughter kind of did this, really with Harvard, actually. I asked her, she was very surprised to get into Harvard, and she had never said she wanted to. There were other places that she said she wanted to go, and I said, why didn't you ever say you wanted to go to Harvard? Because, of course, when she got in, she was delighted. She said, well, I didn't dare say I wanted to go to Harvard, because then I would have to disappoint myself and other people. So I thought, wow, that's kind of hard for a young girl. So anyway, show your dreams who's boss. Sometimes we dream big and we scare ourselves. We look at what we declared in our biggest, truest moments, and we decide we were thinking too big. After a string of bad days, we begin to think of our dreams as taskmasters or hard-to-get lovers, and we concoct reasons we don't really want them after all. For shame. Your dreams are at your beck and call, and don't ever forget it. Their job is to serve you, inspire you, pull you forward, and keep you from eating that third brownie. Make them toe the line. So, I mean, we've all heard people that say, oh, yeah, I didn't really want that anyway, when it got too hard. And then the follow-up to that is, it's okay to outgrow your dreams. And this is probably more for people our age. It starts the dream house of your childhood would not hold your wardrobe today.
Right.
And the dream job of today may feel like a prison sentence tomorrow. So we've had that experience of proclaiming something and then saying, oh, that's not really what I wanted. And that's okay. I think in this goal-setting age, if we proclaim something, we feel like we have to continue going for it, even if we don't want it anymore.
Right. So don't be afraid to say, oh, you know what, I was wrong about that, which is always a good advice, bits of advice. Anyway. I mean, and admit you're wrong. It gets back to that one as well.
Right.
We're talking to Becky Blades about her book, Do Your Laundry or You'll Die Alone, advice your mom would give if she thought you were listening. We'll talk more with Becky and take your phone calls and emails as well. Tell us about bits of advice you have gotten over the years that either were so significant they stayed with you, or you discarded them immediately because they were so bad, or perhaps you were the person delivering this advice and it either did or did not get used. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and talk more with Becky and you in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the Kansas City author and artist Becky Blades. She's written a little book with lots of advice packed with pictures as well that just about anybody in life can use to figure out the road ahead. The book is called Do Your Laundry or You'll Die Alone, advice your mom would give if she thought you were listening. It grew out of an email Becky sent to her own daughter Taylor when she sent Taylor off for her freshman year at Harvard University. She's now back from that freshman year and probably brimming with advice of her own that she can offer back, but we'll talk about that later. You can join us now as we talk about advice you might have gotten over the years or given over the years that was either really, really good, really, really stuck out, or really, really bad and stuck out for the same reason. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Okay, here's one that really stood out to me. Ask quality questions.
Yeah. That says, you know, there's different kinds of questions. If you ask an open-ended question, I'll just say open-ended questions allow you to take the conversation where you want to. For example, how was your week? And specific questions let people know you've been listening. Example, what did you wind up doing with that stray ferret you brought home last week?
Much more specific, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so things that have specific answers, but you want to be careful to not ask just the basic yes and no questions. You know, the things that give you, fine, it's good.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you try to, you know, your kids are going and meeting new people, and sometimes they don't, especially the driven kids at Harvard. There's some, they haven't spent all their time socializing. So, you know, asking an open-ended question might be better at a party than talking about what you learned in your science class, because I think that's maybe what they spend some time doing.
Right.
I don't know.
I have to. It was not in here specifically. I have to assume it's implied in the basic "Do your laundry or you'll die alone." But the classic advice of make sure you're wearing clean underwear in case you get in an accident.
Exactly. Those are implied.
Right.
There's some old motherly stuff. I did trot out, don't air your dirty laundry, because I couldn't resist, but. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the traditional motherly advice, I either tried to put a little, a little addendum to it, like, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything. I added, you're smart enough to think of something nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to make some things fresh.
Well, there is a lot of yin-yang quality here, too, where there's stuff that builds up first but then humbles later on as well. For example, when we were talking about dreams and you said that your dreams keep you from eating that third brownie, you know, so there is a real yin-yang quality to a lot of this stuff where it's like, you know, make sure you take it this far, but there's also, remember, there's this angle of it to consider as well.
Right, the fear factor. You talked about fear at the beginning, putting the oxygen mask on yourself first. You know, I say in there, be afraid, you know, honor your fear, because we all have those instincts. But don't be paranoid. There's extremes of things. And life and maturity is about figuring out that balance for yourself.
Right. It really does require some skill. I noted that with those two in particular, Honor Your Fear, followed by Don't Be Paranoid.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then there's the cotton always shrinks in the washer, no matter what the label says. Does this mean don't wash cotton? No, it just means buy it on the big side.
Right.
Wool shrinks when you get it wet, and then it shrinks more when you dry it. Does this mean don't buy wool? No, it just means don't wash it. And then the third one is common sense and self-restraint shrink in the presence of passion. Does this mean don't be passionate? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. All good advice on sizing. Let's take a call from Rex in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Becky Blades, the creator of Do Your Laundry or You'll Die Alone.
Hello, this is Rex.
Mm-hmm.
And my piece is called The Power of Yes. And the advice that I like to pass on, particularly people that are writing books, is that one of the nicest things you can do for someone is to learn something from them and let them know it.
Hmm.
Good stuff.
I like that.
And who is the person who you most exemplifies this in your own life, Rex?
And this other one said, agree with what you can before you disagree with what you must.
Oh, that's a good one to keep an open mind. There's a fair amount of stuff in your book, Becky, about making sure you keep an open mind in dealings with other people.
Right. I can't think about, knowing that you can't really walk in somebody else's shoes. We can try to, but true empathy is really impossible, but keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's that exercise. I love, inherent in Rex's comment was just saying thank you, was acknowledging, and that's in the thank you portion, that thank you notes are always in style in their various forms, that if you need to show appreciation, if you feel appreciation for somebody, you should absolutely express it. It could make somebody's day. It could make somebody's life.
Well, that raises the question then about how people view some of this advice. Obviously, your daughter's a millennial, so this must seem some of this must seem positively archaic. Things like thank you notes and give people seats on buses and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think that's what we all want when we change generations, is we want to make sure that civilization endures. And I cannot sleep knowing or wondering if this whole generation is going to get it, to give somebody older or less capable of standing a seat on the bus. I mean, it should go without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Right. Other advice that is a little less deep, perhaps, than requires a little less. Keep your hands below your shoulders. What is that about?
Okay, so I'm going to talk softly because I don't want my daughter to hear this. Girls, I won't talk about boy people. I don't know that. But girls have habits that revolve around touching their faces, whether they're picking their zits or pulling their hair or twirling their hair or pulling at their eyelashes, these mad-making habits, touching their clothing. Any mother who's raised teenage girls has been saying, put your hands down, stop picking your face. So I decided to group everything in one thing, and, they say, don't do this. They say you should tell kids what to do. So I'm just telling them to put their hands down.
Make it a positive instead of don't do this, keep your hands below your shoulders. And yes, I can tell you that boys do plenty of strange things above their shoulders as well. But
good.
I think you knew that. You've been married for a long time.
Okay.
So, Becky, here's an interesting one. If you want to shorten an argument, break into a French accent. What?
Oui, oui, because you cannot keep a straight face. Someone is... Now, I have to tell you, the you're one of the best interviewers I've ever had. The other one was another public radio reporter who is just incredulous at this, and he said, if my wife did that, I'd get mad. He said, don't you think people will get mad if you're arguing and you break into an accent? And I said, well, you just got to try it.
Uh-huh. Well, I suppose, is there a specific bit of advice here about keep a sense of humor in all situations? There is, in fact.
There is. It says, I think, don't joke in the security line
there
at
it
the airport,
is. Mm-hmm.
But try to find humor everywhere else.
Right. Okay.
That's the only place I think someone should get mad at you for joking.
Yes, and have, of course, over the years, as several people behind bars have proven. Little habits can cost you big, as you point out. There are lots of examples, but what did you have in mind here?
Well, this is another personal. Most of these came from real personal trials, and it's the coffee habit at our house. We have a terrible Starbucks habit in this generation, and $4 a day for a fancy coffee. We told our daughters if they could not have fancy coffee, they're spending their own money on it, but still they're spending all of their money on these habits, and they could have had a cheap used car, at least a down payment on one, with the $4 a day that they spent at Starbucks. So we added it up and said, you know, be careful of habits like these. And
all right, so be aware that the things do add up over time. You can tell them from me that if you keep it to one day a week and call it Fatty Coffee Friday, you'll save the money from the other 4 days.
I love it. I'll tell the financial planner that too. Yes, one Fatty Coffee Friday.
Right. Followed pretty closely by pay yourself first. This is not just money you're talking about here. It's a bit of metaphors as well, right?
Yeah. You know, that's something that a financial planner will tell you, that if you pay yourself the 10% first, you know, you'll have money at the end of it. But also, the entry is about, as you start earning money, you'll start paying people some of it, the landlord, the phone company, the tax man, the guy keeps other people from putting stuff in the dumpster. And one day you'll realize that other people have, you've earned $100,000 and you have nothing to show for it. So it's that personal bank account, save the little things that they do add up, kind of in contrast to the coffee habit we were talking about.
Let's see. You have also damaging someone's car in a parking lot. This is an interesting approach I'd never heard of before. Have you actually used this approach?
You know, I found myself putting information on my windshield and thinking, what if my daughter were doing this? Wonder what they if they would know what to do. Would they put their phone number? That's not very safe. So the advice I give is to put your insurance agent's phone number. So say you bump into somebody in the lot and you want to do the right thing. You call your own insurance agent and say, I just bumped into someone's car, and you can expect a call. So you leave the agent's phone number or a card, but not your own, because if you're a young woman, I think there are a lot of safety things we have to think about when young women head off to be on their own if they've not had to deal with those things.
Right. I never heard that particular approach before, but it certainly does sound like a solid one. Lots of things about good citizenship in here. You know, vote, sure. Volunteer, sure. But followed soon by do not correct another person's grammar, even kids.
Unless you're getting paid to do it. Oh, I guess maybe kids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Kids don't like it anymore, though, do they?
I also felt it was my job to tell my girls when they were being annoying or what kind of behaviors make them annoying. And at least my older daughter became a grammar Nazi. And it just, you know, there's a time for that, and that's when somebody asks you. But totally, you know, constantly correcting people doesn't go over very well.
Which I suppose then rolls off into one that comes a bit later in the book, which is don't be the smartest person in the room except in class. And is that for the same set of reasons, really?
Exactly. Nobody likes to know it all. You know, we could write a whole book on those, and I think somebody has this year, How to Be Boring. All of those things that we shouldn't talk about are surgeries. We shouldn't talk about, you know, the things that nobody cares about, and we shouldn't be a know-it-all.
All right, a couple of things that probably would work more for younger people. And of course, this book was directed at your own daughter Taylor when she left for college. Originally, was the starting point for this book. Facebook is not friendship. This is going to get a few rolled eyes, I think, around the world.
I happen to really like Facebook, and I've liked it more as I've been promoting a book. But this is just to say it's not friendship. You miss a lot. You can keep in touch with people. You can keep friendships going far away. But if you're spending more time looking at a screen than you are looking at someone across the table, you're missing a lot. For example, touching. So I just think this generation needs to hear that. And the conversation's going on now. I think even among that generation, they're putting down their screens and they're realizing that they need more personal time in their friendships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, real in-person sorts of things. Again, to the yin and yang of the book. I mean, for example, you praise Pop-Tarts on one page, but then you get into healthy food on the very next.
Yeah, that is straight from my daughter. Pop-Tarts were her freshman breakup food, and I guess if you're going to have a binge, you don't want to pull out your nuts and your apples. So if you know there's debauchery. Is okay in moderation.
All kinds of good.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's just kind of a family joke, and the Pop-Tarts people love it. I think it's the most unhealthy food probably on the planet, but
followed closely by Twinkies. Sure. All right, the book is full of all kinds of fun stuff. It's called Do Your Laundry or You'll Die Alone: Advice Your Mom Would Give If She Thought You Were Listening. Becky, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the Jefferson Exchange.
It has. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Monday on the Jefferson Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about funding for aging and disabilities programs. We'll talk at 8:30 about the ongoing efforts to balance water users in the Klamath Basin and how that translates to actual legislation in Congress. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll talk to the folks putting together this year's Oregon Wilderness Conference coming up in Portland. That's all Monday on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistants are Reed Newland and Megan Mercier. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Please join us again Monday at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great weekend.